It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Big thank you to them and my partner right here, Captain Mike Ward.
Captain Sean.
How are you doing this boat morning? Driver, Sean. We get to some of that. Hey, lot to do on today's show. We'll talk some fishing on today's show. And we'll talk some land management, getting ready for hunting season. I mean, yep. So today, South Zone Dove comes in at noon.
Yep.
So sure does. North Zone, of course, was last weekend. Teal came in this morning at 30 minutes before sunrise.
Yep.
So, and we actually got a cold front's not threat, a dry front.
Came a dry through. Front, a cool front. A cool,
right.
A cool dry front.
Yeah, we got a front.
Hey,
how about
it
that?
Is awesome because last year, Sean, we didn't get any kind of even a cool snap come through till like October.
Right.
So this is way ahead of schedule right now.
Bringing those teal in. Although the funny thing is, so we have, I think I'm going to the North Zone this afternoon to dove hunt.
Yeah.
Because South Zone spot, not like had a bunch of doves. But
well, you got them same three though.
Yeah, no, they actually got to. I think I had 28.
Really?
In one place and 15 in another.
I'm gonna come hunt with you now.
Now y'all that don't listen to the show all the time.
Get
this
me
is
a
long
you
running.
Get almost a limit.
Yeah, I've got it's a continuing trying to build this dove field and get them coming there. So had those two different places, two different dove fields I had set up. One pretty small, the other one about 3.5 acres.
Yeah.
And they when the front came through. Friday, like Thursday afternoon, they were all there. Front came through yesterday. My buddies out there working, they said they're all gone. And so in our conversation we had with Seth Maddox, the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, when he and I were talking doves, I said, what about when doves get blown out by a storm or something like that? And he said, where are they going, Sean? I love it when people challenge me. People have a science background and stuff like that. It's like the old... You know, my whole thing that maybe my friends that have said this or listening this morning, when they all in our pond at the farm, they'll be like, you got to get rid of all those turtles. They're eating all your fish. And I'm not talking about snapping turtles. I'm talking about just regular turtles.
Right.
I said, how's that turtle going to get that bass?
Yeah.
You know, it just takes a second to think. So I said something. So Seth Maddox says, well, where are they going to go? He said, we're at the bottom of the flyway. He said, they're going to go east or west, maybe. He said, you know, they're and right now we're dealing with. There's really not any migratory doves. I mean, there might be some, but the majority of what we raised around here.
Migratory come in basically November, December.
Right. These are the ones that raised up around here.
Right.
He said, where do you think they left for? And I said, I don't know they're gone, but he's just making the point. You know, we all get this idea that it's this epic thing when our doves go, they've flown to Mexico. They have not flown to Mexico.
No.
They moved over to somebody else's field or something like that.
That's what they'll do.
Know? Although nobody in our area is – we got peanuts, of course. You know where we are. And,
yeah.
But nobody's harvesting peanuts yet.
They do, things will change.
Well, then they'll go – but I don't know where they went. So
yeah.
I'm going to go to the North Zone today where some people have some birds and and try to hunt them. Also, of course, we're still talking fishing. You and I both were – snapper fishing last weekend.
Yep.
Separately, you were a lot more successful than I was, but continuation of snapper season. So I got, actually it was on yesterday's Midday Mobile show, before I even got on the air, started with all the politics and everything. I had people texting me, is snapper season still open?
Yeah.
And I said, yes, it is. And so here's the update, and we'll try to get Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, back on the show maybe next week or in next couple weeks. He said, I said, so what's the deal? He said, okay. Here's from the, I'm not going to say horse's mouth because he can kick my butt, from the director's mouth, he said we are at 872,000 pounds, okay? Because remember,
so that's a quarter of a million pounds, basically.
Left, yeah. We're at 872,000 pounds, means we have just over a quarter of a million pounds left. If we do 15,000 pounds per weekend, that means 15 more weekends. Now, that's, once again, this equation, if it stays at 15,000, this is the thing we've talked
about.
That's
what it has been, I guess, for the last couple of weeks
or
so. That's what he's talking about.
Right. So those numbers will be way higher in the beginning of the season. But you and I have talked about the people element. School's back in. Sports are back in. Hunting camp work's being done. There's just less.
There's going to be less from this point on.
There were a lot fewer boats out there when I was snapper fishing last weekend than I've seen.
Yeah. And that was Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, it's Labor Day weekend, and they were down.
Yeah.
So you can imagine this weekend.
And it was pretty weather.
Yes.
Basically, it was pretty weather.
Except for where we were Saturday, but that's a whole other story. But Sunday was gorgeous. Yes.
I went Sunday, and it was beautiful. And Monday, I think, was beautiful, too. I didn't go. But
that's because I didn't go.
Yeah.
Those days, that's when it gets beautiful.
But it goes kind of back to what me and you've been talking about for a long time, Sean. Open the thing up all year.
Yeah, take the derby out of it.
Take the derby out of it. Mm-hmm. And people will just go when they get a chance to go.
Yeah. I mean, you're always going to see.
The first part of the season is always
going to see.
Season's just starting. Everybody's fired up. Yeah. And the people are going to go just like they did last year, just like they did the year before that. But then, if they can go anytime they want to, even if they left it, you know, 4 days a week, Friday, mm-hmm. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, they would eventually just get to the point where, well, I'll go just whenever I can go, like they are right now.
Yeah, and I wonder if you keep – this pacing for sure works when we're not in June, July. Now,
yes.
What does June, July do to it? That's what we'll talk to Scott about it. But he said – so here's the story. So everybody wondering. So snapper season opened today, right now, 4-day weeks.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Okay. And he's saying right now we're averaging, I'd say right now, last few weeks, 15,000 pounds per weekend. So the math here means 15 more weekends to reach the tonnage. He said in theory, once again, this isn't anything on the website. This is us trying to get information, and it's great we have a guy like Scott Bannon who'll just talk to you on the phone and tell you what's real.
That's right.
He said in theory we could fish until the end of the year. Again, he said it's all about the effort.
That's right.
In other words,
I mean,
if all of a sudden goes to 30,000 pounds or 60,000 pounds, it'd be over a lot
for
sooner.
For some reason, it's going to be over with quicker.
So there it is. He said 15 at this rate.
Yes.
If it stayed at 15,000 pounds per 4-day weekend, we could fish 15 more weekends.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. But then there's my big talk. I always go, you know what I'm going to do, Mike? You know, I said, one of these beautiful days in October, November, I'm going to go snapper fishing. You know how many times I do that?
None. Yeah.
I understand that. Because I go to the woods.
Once we get up in the woods and start doing all our stuff at the camp, and I haven't been to my camp yet.
Wow. Okay?
You know, I have not been yet. So I know that when I get up there probably next weekend, I'm
going
to have 1,000 things I need to do. And the reason I haven't been is because it's been so wet that in that black belt, you can't put a tractor on the ground. You sink up to the axles right now.
Mike, in the sandy ground that you know I occupy.
Yes.
Western Washington County and West Mobile County.
Yeah.
I got standing water in the sand.
It's crazy.
So I wouldn't get near any of that clay soil.
Yeah.
Because we're holding water. I told you how much flooding I had, you know.
Oh,
and just water sitting. It's unreal.
And it was the same way up the country. I mean, they had tremendous.
Yeah, but y'all hold it for longer. What I'm saying is, God forbid, if I've got it like I do in the sandy soil, y'all must be like.
It's bad. Yeah, I had a friend of mine that
looked like Lake Shelby up there or something like that.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine up there a week and a half ago, and he said, no matter what happens, we don't get another ounce of rain. He said, it's a minimum of 2 weeks, no matter what happens. And we've had rain since.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just hadn't been able to go. I hadn't gone up there because really not anything I can do.
Make sure your winch is working before you go.
Yes.
Yeah, make sure that's working. Mm-hmm. So the snapper season thing. So right now, once again, all things can change. But as the formula goes, the rest of the year, we could be snapper fishing for the 4 days.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. And like I said, we'll get more of this discussion. And right now, I know it was last weekend. I don't want to step outside. Check your local listings. But as of last weekend, all three were triggerfish, amberjack, and snapper.
Yes. Now, so, I don't know. I haven't checked either, Sean.
Yeah, I have to go.
You know, I know last weekend I could.
Right.
But now.
I just want to make sure. But
I'm
we know
sure.
Snapper's open, but the other two are probably open. You can use like. You know, I'd say I could check it during the break, the Fish Rules app or any of those apps.
That's right. That's what I check.
And go check that and let you know. But it's, you know, it's a nice thing. Did y'all get into any amberjack or any triggers?
We could have caught, I'm sure, plenty of amberjack. We just kept one. We caught some triggerfish. We caught a pile of beeliners and white snapper. We were in deep
you're
water.
Killing me.
We were in deep water fishing. Caught a limited snapper. But
amberjack's open.
Yeah. Okay, well, then I think triggerfish is,
too.
Yeah,
I'll look at that in a second. So, y'all got them beeliners?
Yeah, we got
See, he does this. He didn't talk to me before the show because he knows it's going to drive me nuts.
We caught a lot of beeliners, sure did. Most of it was in 300, 400 foot of water and even 500 foot of water.
Deep dropping.
Yeah, deep dropping. And, you know, there's a lot of good fishing out there right now. And one thing that, you know, we really haven't talked about on this show is the swordfish fishery.
I see the pictures. You know, I talk about, I see the pictures. It seems to be, is it that there's more of them, or are we just getting better at catching them?
What's happened?
Triggerfish open too. All
okay. Right. Through the years, I mean, I've been bill fishing for many, many, many years.
Yes.
Okay. We'd go out, we'd go spend a night, and everybody would throw out a line.
At night, right?
At night, yeah. While you're tied up, or while
supposedly
you're
supposedly when they would come up to
that's
shallow.
Right. We'd come up to the top and feed on squid and stuff, and that's when you'd catch them.
Right.
And most of the time, we'd catch a shark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
right. Yes.
So, but. They figured out, and I think the first person that figured it out was a guy down in Key West, Florida, that said, you know, these fish are there.
Right.
We just got to go find where they're at in the daytime.
Yeah.
So he went out in the daytime and figured, you know, they're probably around these big rocks and stuff.
Yeah, the canyons and all that.
800, 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 foot of water. And sure enough, he caught them. He caught them and didn't tell nobody what he was doing for, you know, like a year or so. And then some people figured it out, and a few more. Of course, now it's history.
Yeah.
But the fishing for swordfish, the best fishery is daytime.
Yeah.
That's when you can catch more of them in the daytime and 800, 1,200, 1,500 foot of water than at night. And they are very successful at it. They are catching a lot of, and we, and the fishery out here off of, well, south of us, no matter whether it's off of Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, is unbelievably
good. We're going to have to get us one of these. I know a couple guys we called, maybe, I don't know if they talk to us on the air, but get some of these swordfish guys to come on.
Yeah, I got some that tell us everything we need to know.
And I do like the fact that you're talking about, you know, you just go where they are, because it's like my old thing, Dad would say, well, where do the speckled trout start running? I said, Dad, they're always there. sometimes they're easier to catch, but they're still there. All right, we'll be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good news, too. We've got our buddy Captain Wayne Miller is going to join us, so we'll switch from swordfish to bass like we do on the show. We'll also switch it to the woods here in just a second. I do want to say this on this day, on this show. 20 years since we were attacked here in this country, and so much has gone by, but I said it on the radio this week. I don't know anybody who was not a child at that point who doesn't remember right where they were.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's just
I was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I was in the bathroom getting ready to go to work.
Yep.
8 o'clock in the morning. And when it happened, I can tell you.
I mean, and it's weird because, I mean, there are big things in my life that happened just 5 years ago that I remember happened, but I don't remember all the detail like I do that horrible day 20
years ago.
You know,
certain things you remember, like when Kennedy was assassinated.
See, and I'm your younger, so I don't have that kind of vivid memory.
I was at Bellis Hass. Bellis Hass, and a lot of people don't even know
what
is
Bellis
Hass. Bellis Hass is where T.P. Crockmeyer's used to be at
by the bowling
McGregor.
Alley?
McGregor
and
the airport.
Okay.
McGregor and airport. It used to be a big shopping center, Bellis Hass.
Oh, yeah. Bellis Hass. Yeah, I know where you're talking.
I was in the parking lot when I heard that he was assassinated.
And see,
you remember things like that,
right?
You know?
And that's the funny thing. You jump to, like, I don't have that kind of recollection because I wasn't there, but 9/11 for so many, and then I'm looking at my children that have no recollection because they weren't alive at that
point.
So, but you know, we got the events going on down at the battleship today, solemn day, and remember so many that died on that day 20 years ago, and those that have died in the 20 years since in the war against terror. So,
and there's going to be many more. They hate us with a passion. They're going to try to kill us any way they can do it. It's just a matter of time. We're going to have more.
Well, let's remember our fighting men and women today and those families that lost, you know, their family member, their loved one on that day 20 years ago, for sure. All right. So onward and upward. We're going to have to do this sword fishing thing in the future. Have to get this conversation going.
That'll really be a good show. I promise you it will be, just from how to rig it, what you do, what kind of bait you use, what kind of weight you use, what kind of leader you use, what kind of reels you use. I mean, it's a lot, too. It's a different fishery than just going out and going fishing, different than just going bill fishing.
Right.
I mean, bill fishing, you just use a 50 wide Tiagra or a Penn International or whatever, and troll or whatever, live bait or plastic baits, whatever. it's a little different. Most people use electric reels when they sword fish. You don't have to have an electric reel.
But you'll wish you did.
Yes, easier. It's like you going out deep dropping, trying to catch grouper and stuff in 500, 600, 700 foot of water. It's just easier if you got an electric reel.
Yeah, it's not about the fish. It's about the weight.
That's right.
That's what it's about. I do want to tackle this, too, and before we go any further, because we'll talk some freshwater fishing with Wayne Miller coming up in just a little bit, which is also going to include speckled trout and redfish in the discussion, I'm sure. But I have gotten – thank you. A lot of people have taken me up on the offer where I – because I've talked about the throw-and-mow technique. Yes. I do. And then I said, if y'all want to talk about it, call me or email me, and folks have. So I want to revisit this again to maybe stop you before you do something if you want to try this. Now, once again,
it's getting a little late.
It is getting a little late.
It's a little late.
I can tell you where I am in the process.
Yeah.
Okay, where I am in the process is the fields that – well, let me do this, and then I'll update for people who don't know what we're talking about. But the fields that would be high enough that I wouldn't get a good glyphosate spray on them. In other words, you know, whatever kind of sprayer – I mean, if you had a tractor that was, at, you know, could have the sprayer at 20 feet, it wouldn't be an issue. But I'm spraying from ATVs.
Yeah.
So
glyphosate Roundup.
Yeah, the
something
generic
the,
name.
For, yeah, yeah. Just something to kill the weeds. Okay.
Kill everything.
There's a lot of different ones. But
yeah, but glyphosate's the generic. Generic version. So we have mowed some fields, but Bush Hog fields, which is not rotary mowed them, because Bush Hog's a brand. And rotary, you tell I'm like a ag guy, right? So we've rotary mowed the fields that grew up best, which is also important because it lets you know when you're looking at soil fertility, when you're riding around your lease or your property or whatever, pay attention. The soil tests are important and all that, but the old Sean Sullivan's redneck soil test is when I ride around, taking into account sunlight. If you have a long, narrow, shaded patch, that's one thing. But if you have a bunch of patches that are big and open and this patch and this patch are up 5 feet, and that one over there is 2 feet. There's a reason. You got a fertility issue there.
Yeah.
It just told you. Nature just told you, which, you know. So we've cut the ones that were high to the point that I wouldn't be able to get a good spray. In other words, you're trying to spray and hide Johnson grass or whatever. It's not spraying the 12 feet you're supposed to, whatever. So we mowed those just to have them. Now, it's not mowed down. They're probably mid-calf, you know, deep, so we pick up the rotary mower as high as you can and go over just to get it leveled. So that's where I am. I haven't done anything else. So this process we've talked about, so throw and mow. This is, and there's high-tech ways, and people use grain drills, and we've talked about this before on the show. This is the cost-effective. This is, I've been on a budget my whole life doing this, how I do it. So at some point here in the next couple weeks, I'm going to go spray all the fields, okay? Glyphosate. I'm going to kill them.
Right.
I'm going to kill them dead. Go through there and kill everything in there. Now, if you're, like I said, if the grass wasn't up so high you had to mow it, you haven't done anything yet. You just go in there and spray it, kill it. Now, once it's dead, give it 10 days, or it depends on the kill you get. When you have it dead, you're going to find when it's, I know this is hard, but where you've had a period of a couple days that are dry, got a rain coming is usually best for anything. Yeah. And I'm going to go in there and into that standing field of dead weeds and grass and holdover forbs or whatever it is, I'm going to put my fertilizer. If you want to add, if that's when you add lime, I usually like to add lime in the spring, but if whatever amendments you're making, you put those out as well as your seeds. Okay. I would say one thing as a rule of thumb starting out, and it's made me think about this because the number of calls I've fielded on this here in the last 2 weeks, I do plus up my seed count a little bit. Like if they say it's 50 pounds to an acre for this wheat or whatever, I might do 60.
Yeah. Or now, 70. It won't hurt.
Just I plus up a little bit, but you're going to save – you're saving such money because you're not disking. Those who are not familiar with this. So you now I'm putting my seed, my fertilizer, my amendments in the soil. Then I'm coming back. Now it's in there. Now I'm coming back with that rotary mower, Bush Hog, dropping that baby down low and letting her rock. And I'm mowing that field like I was mowing it the first time. You know, I'm just going to mow it, but I'm going to mow it as low as I can. And the combination of the blades turning – and the vacuum. You know how, like, underneath, there's a suction that happened. That makes those seeds move their way down through the dead plants to the ground. At the same time, I'm covering them up with the thatch layer that I'm mowing. So that is trapping the moisture in there, and it's giving that seed the moisture it needs, protection from the sun. And I'm growing topsoil every year because I'm not disking it down 6 inches, 7 inches.
Yes.
And most of those seeds, and like you couldn't do this if you're doing a spring plant. You can't do this with beans or corn. But if you're planting clover, you're planting wheat, you're planting oats, you're planting brassicas. Brassicas barely need to – dang, brassica just needs to see the soil. It doesn't even need to touch it.
That's right.
You know, I've always joked, how deep? I said, just let it see the soil.
It's pretty much the same way with wheat and oats.
Yeah. You don't have to – It's like, other than,
it will find, the root will the only find thing I, its way down.
Yeah, the only thing I bury deep is chufas.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, it finds its way down, and it's there, it's touching soil now, and has this roof, its greenhouse of this thatch over it. And that's all you do. Like I said, sometimes, because I got a culture packer, I do roll across it with the culture packer, it's not essential. You don't have to do it at all.
No.
And those seeds will do what those seeds do. They feed that plant long enough to get its little neck up there to get sun. And its roots are going down one way, the other part's coming up to get sun, and that field's done. You didn't expose that soil to the sun, which would blow topsoil off, also lose moisture, right? And you're building soil. I hunt places that don't have good soil. Okay? Yeah. The two places I had that don't have good soil. But over the years, I've gone from having kind of tan sand to having topsoil. I mean, all you do, if you're in sandy land, go walk out in your piney woods or your woods out there and go dig up a handful of leaves and look underneath. It's great soil.
It is, yeah.
Because it hadn't been tilled.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to recreate in those patches.
I'll tell you what else it does, Sean, that you probably haven't thought about.
Okay.
Okay, and I have figured this out.
Saves me losing disc bearings?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But think about this. If you go out and you disc your field up 8 inches deep like we've been doing,
mm-hmm.
and then you go in there and put your seed out, and even if you cultivate pack it, and even if you pack that dirt down a little bit, okay, and that seed comes up and it gets 6 inches tall, and the deer comes in there and grabs that seed, grabs that wheat, mm-hmm. what's he going to do?
He pulls the whole thing out.
Pulls the whole thing out.
Right, versus cutting it. Yep.
Now, doing it the way you're doing, mm-hmm. that root is going down into that hard soil.
Yeah, I mean, relatively non-disc soil. Yeah.
Relatively hard soil. So that root is going to be
anchored.
Lot harder.
I never thought about it that way.
A lot harder for that deer or whatever's eating it to
pull
it out.
No, that's a good point. You're right. Yes. I never thought about that. Yeah. But that's a...
And anybody that thinks that what you're telling them is crazy... Take 30 seeds of oats, 30 seeds of wheat, throw it in the back of your pickup truck, and ride around for about a week.
Correct.
And well I said. Guarantee you that every one of them is going to grow.
People say, well, you got to have those seeds packed down there in a fluff dirt to grow. Look at what Mike said. It's so true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what happens afterwards is the other part of it. But that seed, the reason that energy is in the seed, it's the gas tank for that plant to get a root down and get its neck up and start getting sun.
Yeah.
And it can do that in the back of your truck. It also can do it under that layer of thatch. It's kept all the moisture in there.
That's the main thing. That's the key secret to what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're keeping that moisture in there like a greenhouse does. Yep. It creates that moisture that is going to let that seed build that root and let it get up.
Yep.
So what you're doing is, I think, is perfect, really.
And it's,
some places you can do it. Like my place right now, I haven't been up there.
Yeah.
The grass is going to be 6 foot, 8 foot tall. I can't do it, you know. But
if
somebody that can be there and take care of their place like it should be, I'm not taking care of my place like I should be.
Not this year.
But if you can.
And the mowing thing I do, we're going to go to the break and get Wayne on, but the only reason I mowed, like I told you at the beginning of this segment, is I had a couple fields where it was so high that I wasn't going to get a good spray of killer, of glyphosate. So that's the only reason I mowed. If my field never grew, which would show me a fertility problem, but if my field never grew more than 2 feet during the summertime, then I would never even have to mow the first time.
That's right. Yeah, you're good.
So keep the questions coming on it. It's a subject I like to talk about. And if you got less than perfect soil like I live with, it's a game changer. All right, coming right back. Bass fishing on our brains. Right, have we taken enough places already? We've been snapper fishing, sword fishing.
Been up the country.
We dove hunting, planting, working on
We only got one place left to go, Sean.
Yeah, we got to go to the Mobile Tensaw Delta, and when we do that, we check in with Captain Wayne Miller. Talk about a man that does way more catching than he does fishing. That's why
I don't know
him.
About that. He fishes a lot.
He does a lot of catching too. Captain Wayne, good morning.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
Doing good, Wayne.
Probably not as good as you. So think about, we're talking during the news break there, that not only you've got the fishing going on here, we've got the nice weather, you know, a little break from summer.
Yeah, we really do. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag right now from the standpoint of, you know, we got some real pluses, but we're, weather-wise, but, we're still dealing with the effects of all this, you know, high water over the last 2-3 weeks. And, kind of the baseline we always use when we start looking at the Delta is, you know, what are those river stages? You know, where are we at?
Yeah.
And, what we just recently saw, you know, like a week ago, was like the Alabama at Claiborne was at 31 feet, you know, and the Tom was up in the middle 30s. Up at Coffeyville. So,
explain to people what that means. A lot of people don't. You say 30 and 29,
yeah,
or whatever.
We throw that a bunch around.
A lot of people just don't know what that means.
Yeah, well, you know, the great thing is, you know, you can go on any search engines and, you know, look at these projections on the river. But basically those levels for both the Alabama and the Tom Bigby are up, you know, right at, you know, minor flood stage.
Yes.
So that's real unusual for this time of year. I mean, typically in the dog days of summer, you know, the rivers have dropped out, everything's hot, you know, mm-hmm. we're just miserable. And but what we're actually experiencing now is basically what we typically see in the spring, where we have, you know, this real high water situation up on those rivers that feed into the Delta. Now, you know, what that translates into down here is, you know, the Mobile River reading, the Berry Steam Plant, which is the one that most people look at when they're going to go fishing in the Delta. They want to see, you know, what's the berry reading, and that's typically, you know, what you hear people talk about. And but you know, our reading on the berry got up to, you know, 8.5 feet, and typically this time of year it would be about 3.5 feet.
Yes.
So that gives you a good idea about just how much additional water we've got over the Delta. You know, now the good news right now is, as we progress into the middle of, you know, September, we're seeing all those river levels drop, and we're seeing this, you know, the Mobile stage, and the water all over the Delta is really starting to fall out good. Now, it's still muddy. If you go across any of the main rivers, you're going to look and go, man, that looked bad. But, you know, the good news for fishing is there's a lot of the bigger lakes and the creeks and a lot of the small creeks, you know, off these main tributaries, off these rivers, that still have some good fishable water in them. You just have to, just like in the spring, you have to go up in these creeks and lakes until you start seeing some clearer water, and that's typically where you want to go to, because it's just a lot harder to catch those fish in that really muddy water. So, but I've been had a great week, this past week, but I've just had to really, you know, target those upper stretches of all the waterways that I've been, you know, going on.
You know, what's interesting here, you're talking about, let's think about it like from a fisherman's perspective. I'm like, dang it, you know, it's muddy, but like you said, you can get away from it, go up in the back of the creeks. But from the fish's perspective, yeah, we just dropped that water temperature a whole bunch. It's better for the fish.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, yesterday morning and even this morning, I didn't look at it this morning, but yesterday morning, the first creek I ran into, I ran about halfway up in it, and I started seeing, you know, a real change in the water color. And, when I saw that, I stopped and started fishing right there. And but the first creek I ran in was off the Mobile River, and the water temperature was 78 degrees.
Wow.
Now, guys, let me repeat that.
Yeah.
78 degrees.
Okay, a week ago, what was it?
It was, you know, up in the, you know, the mid 80s, you know, the 86,
right,
you know, 87 range.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
that would have taken weeks, right? I mean, without water,
yeah.
I mean, how long would that take to drop it, you know, by just having cooler nights and shorter days?
You know, it did take a pretty significant amount of time. But,
yep.
But, you know, even out in the main river, you know, because after I saw that yesterday morning, it really just amazed me. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to make a point. Even though I'm not going to fish out there, I want to stop out in the main river and just, you know, sit down and idle for a few minutes and let my, you know, let my equipment, you know, equilibrate on, you know, that water
right.
out there. And when I went out in the Mobile River, the main river itself was 80 degrees.
Man. Wow. Yeah.
So, I guess the most important thing that you know, I'll, you know, talk about in relation to that water temperature being that cool is that, you know, we normally see about an additional 10 degrees on that this time of year. So what I think is going to happen is once we get this water back down, I think we're going to see that fall bite that really just takes off, you know, typically toward, you know, the end of September, you know, and starting in October. I think we're going to see that, you know, come a little earlier this year than what we would normally have.
That's good news.
Just because, you know, I mean, everything, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, the bait movement and these fish, I mean, you know, everything with them is about water temperature.
Now let's talk about the bait situation here. So we have, you know, this is this tough subject here, not for the bass world, but for speckled trout. And I want to catch up on redfish too with you. But we worry about the shrimp situation, which actually plays in big in the bass fishing. Do you think that this high water now is going to mess up our shrimp situation? What do you see? And what's your feeling over time? I mean, what do you think we're going to deal with?
No, I don't think it will because, you know, before this water got up, I mean, before this, we saw this last big rise. I mean, we had tremendous volumes of shrimp already in the lower end of the delta.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm talking about from Gravine Island, you know, down to the causeway. And, you know, even though this water has risen quite a bit, you know, those shrimp, they'll stay in that grass.
Okay.
So I think once we see this water drop on back out, you know, we're just going to see that natural migration that happens every fall probably be expedited a little bit and see, you know, some good movement on the shrimp come on up in the delta and, you know, in October.
Well, I was going to say, do you think it might be more of an October thing than wait until, you know, Halloween like a lot of times?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, toward the first in the middle of October because, I mean, it really is. It's pretty amazing to have water temperatures as cool as we've got them right now. But we've just had a very unusual year.
Oh yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, and you know, I don't attribute that to global warming or anything else. I mean, everybody's got an opinion about it, but you know, I think you know, we just like everything associated with weather, you go through cycles and. You know, we see it, you know, on this delta, you know, we see, and a lot of times it's related to weather events like hurricanes. And, but, you know, we'll see vegetation that, you know, over a course of 10 years gets obliterated in the delta, and then it comes back strong.
Yeah.
And that's what we're in the middle of right now. So, you know, to me, I mean, these are just natural phenomenons that happen. You know, but it's pretty unique. I mean, I hadn't seen this in, you know, probably 20 years.
But it's not uncommon to have high water this time of year either. I mean,
no.
Like you say, when you have these hurricanes
come in. I mean, but
it's not every year we have it, but it's not unusual to have high water this time of the year because of the hurricanes and depressions that we have come up through here.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual.
Yeah. But, you know, what's amazing, though, Mike, you know, I mean, people say, well, you know, we dodged a bullet, you know, from the standpoint of the hurricane. But, you know, the initial, you know, when the hurricane came up, the projections were that it was going to make landfall in Louisiana. And then, boy, it was going to hang a hard right and come right over the middle of Alabama.
Right.
So, you know, we get, you know, we're going to end up getting that water when you had that scenario. And, you know, because of the fact that on the west side, we get all that water off the Tom Bigby, and then we get, you know, on the east side from the Alabama, it's, you know, we, irregardless of where these major hurricanes hit along the Gulf, you know, we usually feel some pretty significant impact.
Absolutely we do.
And especially, yeah, when they go west of us, you know, they come in there. Let's do this. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about, with all these things being said, the conditions out there. You talk about the back of the creek. So I want to talk about what you're fishing now, bait-wise, there, and then as we transition into this October, what we need to do. So we'll come back.
You're going to like that discussion, Sean.
Oh, well, that's okay. Now, see, that's why. Okay, let's go to the news. We'll come right back. More Captain Wayne Miller right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, because he said it was going to be what I like.
And we got to talk about redfish.
Yeah, we do have to talk about redfish. Yep. All right, be right back. I can't stand it when he does this. I mean, I can't stand to wait for the answer. He is teasing us. Captain Wayne Miller, our guest here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Remember, check us out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So Captain Wayne, as we went to the news, said there's going to be, I was asking him, okay, with the conditions now and then looking forward to October, kind of how he's fishing, how he's catching them, and he said something I was going to like, and I'm waiting for it, because I think it's, okay, how you fishing them?
Well, I tell you what, Sean, I know you love to listen to a buzz bait, and buddy, let me tell you, I have worn a few of them out over
yes!
the last couple of weeks.
I love topwater. God bless, I love topwater.
Oh, yeah, man, they have really been smoking on top. It's, you know, and there again, you know, I think that has something to do with this, you know, cooler water temperature, but man, it the topwater bite's been just fantastic, and I've been doing exceptionally well with the buzz bait. You know,
okay, that's not enough. That's not enough information.
Really good, and the mornings.
Okay,
that's why I was going to ask
but
you.
But that's not enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're catching them. Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted. So you're catching them how long in the mornings?
You know, I mean, I catch them, you know, up to, you know, 10, 11 o'clock. You know,
I mean, any of these banks,
you know, on these bends where you don't have just direct sunlight on them, I mean, they'll just, you know, they have really been on that buzz bait bite. It's been pretty incredible.
And then the afternoon, you said they're biting pretty good in the afternoon on them too?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one thing right now, you know, we just came out of a nip tide cycle. Mm-hmm. And this coming week, I mean, we got a phenomenal tide, and it's really good in the afternoon. But one thing that a lot of people lose sight of is, you know, we talked about these river stages, and we talked about that Mobile being up, you know, fairly high right now, but it's falling good. Well, when all these rivers are falling this hard, I don't care if it's a nip tide or whatever it is, you can get in these creeks off the main river, and guess what? They got current in them, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, that in and of itself really makes those fish, you know, sets the fish up to feed pretty much all day long.
Yeah, as long as you got current, that water moving in there, that does
cooler,
that does exactly what you said. It sets them up. That puts them in the feeding mode.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, I mean, you know, as well as all the guys that primarily target bass, you know, I mean, they're ambush feeders, so when you have that current, it sets those fish up on those current breaks and, you know, on cypress trees, that, you know, in these creeks where you got this current. So, you know, it not only keeps the fish feeding during the day, but it really helps you, you know, optimize your time on the water from the standpoint of, you know, I pretty well know where those fish are going to be set up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can just target those areas, and but been doing just exceptionally good on the buzz baits and
full size. That's what I wanted to ask you. Are you using, you know, I love lots of lures. Those are we using the bigger size, smaller colors? Come on, man! Don't hold out.
I've got friends that have been using the, you know, Keith's headbanger, and doing really well with it. But, man, you know me, I throw that little mini buzz, that quarter-ounce mini buzz, you know, black, you know, and I change the skirt colors a lot. But I typically don't attach a frog or anything on it. I typically just have a skirt, and I always throw a trailer hook on a buzzbait. I use just a little one-aught trailer hook. But, you know, the thing I love about that little quarter-ounce is, especially with that, you know, double blade configuration it's got, is you can work it so slow. And, you know, it's just a lot of times I think even more so than the feeding impulse that these fish have, I think it just makes them mad.
Yeah, I do too. That's what I like about it. Yeah. I mean, yes, I mean, there's fish that I think, you'd have to prove this in a scientific study, but you could throw a worm biome, you know, or some other bait, and they'd ignore it that day because they were not ready to feed or whatever. But that, they just, I don't think they can, I think they just go, bah, and grab it. I mean, bah, you know, there it is, I gotta get it. So, and you talked, just a couple minutes left here, but you know, you talk about we have to do a whole show about this, about the frog thing. You know, with buzz baits, this idea of trailers and all that, it's, yes, it's for them seeing it. Well, what's your opinion? Them seeing it, but also it's about how high that bait can ride in the water, how much you can reel on it, right? I mean, that's.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's an amazing thing about, you know, nowadays with the abundance of soft plastic trailers you've got, you know, and it's not like the old days where you hung a piece of pork on
pork
a
rod,
hook.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you wanted to change it, you had to get, you know, sharpen your pocket knife.
Sawzall.
Cut that off.
Yeah, sawzall to cut it off, yeah.
But, you know, now, you know, you've got so many different type trailers, and them in and of themselves, you know, they have different style legs on them, and they really make a lot of noise. And from the standpoint of color, I mean, you just got every color you can imagine. So
a lot of action, too.
You can take a base, you know, buzz bait, you know, just a, you know, a quarter or half ounce or 3/8 ounce buzz bait, and with plastic, I mean, you can do so many different configurations, and you know, a lot of that is trial and error. I mean, I do it all the time, but you know, a lot of times, you know, I come up with configurations that, you know, look like a weekend golfer. I mean, they just look crazy and they don't work. But sometimes I hit on one that will.
Yeah,
that's so, you know, I mean, that's the great thing about it. It's you know, but you know, as we move, you know, into the fall, that's something else that I do with these buzz baits also, is I start experimenting a little more with the pink colors and the shrimp colors on the skirts, and that's something that works exceptionally well here on the Delta.
Well, we're going to have to do a whole show about that coming up. Captain Wayne Miller, as always, man, we appreciate it, and I'll let you get back to doing that catching. How about that?
All right, guys.
Thank you, Wayne.
All right, we're out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next.